Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.
Hello, my friends. It is Wednesday, the 13th of March, which means it's time for Mullinger's Weekly Ramble. That's right. It's episode 2. I can't thank you all enough for listening last week. I was absolutely flummoxed and blown away and floored by the response to it. I believe we had something like 400 downloads in the first 24 hours, which is just incredible for a brand new podcast by a basically unknown comedian. So, I'm really excited to be back, and I've been legitimately really looking forward to this, chatting with all of you. It's hump day. I hope to cheer you up. It's early. What's been going on? Well, I'm a year older since I saw you last. Since the last time I was in your ears, I have turned 46. Because, yes, it was my birthday on Monday. Birthdays in your 40s do get slightly more, I don't know if emotional is the word, but there's a lot of food for thought. There's a lot of reminiscing. There's a lot of looking back. Thankfully, this was kind of the perfect birthday. There's nothing worse, I think, than trying to organize a big party and then obviously things, you know, going mad and then you wake up feeling rotten. I didn't want any of that. We just had a really, really nice day, went to the YMCA for a swim with my son in the morning, went to a beautiful Garden Grove Cafe for a Donair at lunchtime, had a beer at lunchtime, which was a treat. You know, it's not many Monday lunchtimes that one is drinking a beer in their 40s, so that was nice. I chatted with my mum and dad, with my brother and my niece, Lily, who I'm delighted to say actually shares my birthday. She turned 18. On Monday, the 11th of March, and needless to say, it feels like absolutely yesterday that Pam and I came bowling out of a nightclub on the King's Road in Chelsea, celebrating my birthday, only to get the call from Kelowna, BC, that my brother's amazing wife, Jessie, had just given birth to a beautiful baby girl called Lily. Feels like yesterday. Now she's 18. And I think, you know, birthdays, especially momentous ones like that, when people are turning 18 or 40 or 50 or whatever, it is harder when your family is all spread out. You know, I've been here 10 years now. I think I've been pretty clear on record that I don't regret moving here ever. And almost every day I feel blessed to have made that decision to leave a life in London behind and move to New Brunswick. But 10 years in, I can admit that there are, it gets tougher with people. You know, my mum, for example, had a hip replacement a few weeks ago. She needs help around the house. My dad's obviously doing his best and doing a great job, I'm sure. But it's really hard to be here and not be there helping and not being there for them. And similarly, you know, my brother, I mean, he also left England. Again, amazing thing, just by coincidence, he also married a Canadian. I say coincidence, always bloody copies me, always has since childhood. Anyway, he lives out in beautiful Okanagan Valley in Vernon, BC. Interesting story, very quickly, in brackets. I did a show a few years ago at the Canadian, I don't know if I should tell this. Will I get in trouble for this? Well, I'll just say, I did a show at the Canadian Embassy in a country that we won't mention which embassy. That way I can't get in trouble and no one else. Anyway, I met like the head dignitary, like the head statesperson of the embassy, the Canadian Embassy in this country, which we will not reveal. And they said to me, and I kid you not, they said, "So you live in New Brunswick?" I said, "Yes." And they said, "And your brother also moved to Canada, I understand." And I said, "Yes, he lives in at the time it was Kelowna he was in. So he lives in Kelowna, BC." And the head of the Canadian Embassy in this particular undisclosed country turned around and said, "Oh, that must be nice, having him closer." No, he is twice as far away in the same country as he was when he still lived in England. How does the head of the Canadian Embassy in this undisclosed country not know that? Anyway, all of this is to say that we're all spread out. So Zoom is a godsend. So yeah, if you were wondering, I had a wonderful birthday. We did all this. I went to watch my son play hockey. I played Sussex last night. Lots of his teammates were away. So it was a very, very difficult game. Both teams played excellently. Sussex won and everyone put in a wonderful performance, which, let's face it, is what it's all about. So yes, birthday, thank you. The Oscars. Obviously, I talked a lot about the Oscars last week. Now we saw them. I hope everyone enjoyed. I have to say, for me personally, I think it was one of the most enjoyable Oscar ceremonies in years. Inherently watchable, entertaining, funny. I think Jimmy Kimmel, four times the charm. He was legitimately funny. I thought the jokes had the right balance of edginess and cynicism with the kind of required celebratory nature. He had it was just really wonderful. I sat there and laughed, is the point. As I mentioned last week, the Oscars are a big thing for me. It's my Super Bowl. I remember 30 years ago, the morning after the Oscars, like walking to work. I was working in WH Smith's in Maidenhead, which is like a British Indigo, and I'd be listening to the Oscar results on my headphones. And again, it's like, I was and am a huge Quentin Tarantino fan. I was jumping for joy when Tarantino and Roger Avery won for best screenplay for Pulp Fiction. I was, again, I'm in 1990 being so angry that Goodfellas didn't win best picture. So, I mean, all of these things, it means a lot to me. So, the results, well, I posted my predictions online. Some of you saw them, some of you commented on them. I predicted all of them. I correctly guessed 16 out of the 23. Winners, partly because I have to say, other than a couple of categories, it was the most predictable Oscars in years, which in some ways is quite boring. It's quite boring that, we all knew Oppenheimer was going to clean up, and it did. What's fun in these ceremonies is there was big surprises. And there weren't any big surprises. The only big surprise was actually not a particularly pleasant one, which was Emma Stone winning Best Actress for Poor Things, which I don't think, I mean, there were signs that was going to happen. She won a couple of the other awards, but beating Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. I think most people wanted Lily Gladstone to win. She certainly deserved to win. It would have been a beautiful thing for her to win. Also, not to take anything away from Emma Stone and her remarkable performance, but Emma Stone already has an Oscar. Very young, already has an Oscar. Didn't need another one. So that was a surprise, but not a good one. I felt a bit gutted when that happened. Again, Martin Scorsese, there's some incredible stat where he has the record for like the most number of films that have had multiple nominations and won nothing. There's something like, there's like five films, like, Killers of the Flower Moon, Taxi Driver, blah, 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 a few others, list them off. And between them, they've got like 35 Oscar nominations, zero wins. So I don't know what it is about, because he's, again, most people love Scorsese. The other big surprise was a pleasant one, which was Godzilla Minus One winning Best Visual Effects. That's right, a movie that cost $15 million beat four other movies, which all of which cost upwards of $200 million. If that is not a victory for the little man, I don't know what is. Well, a beautiful thing. As you know, I'm a huge fan of low-budget filmmaking. Not that $15 million is low-budget, but I love the fact that they proved there and then. I'm a huge fan of stories like, I remember when Clerks came out in, was it 93? Kevin Smith basically delivered the funniest film of the year that was shot for like, made for like 50 grand. And it just kind of proved that what makes great movies is a heart and great writing. It's not about money. And some of the most expensive films ever are some of the worst. So anyway, I'm a huge fan of The Underdog. I'm a huge fan of anyone that can produce something amazing. And especially visual effects is the number one thing that you would think would be the hardest thing to get right on a limited budget. But they did it and they won the Oscar. Good on them. Again, I both best costume design, I predicted Barbie. Poor Things got it. Makeup and hairstyling, I predicted Maestro. Poor Things got it. Again, both well-deserved. Maestro, I should have realized makeup, it was not going to win for that due to the problematic nature of Bradley Cooper's facial makeup, shall we say. Sound made perfect sense that the Zone of Interest beat Oppenheimer for that, because basically everything in the Zone of Interest and everything that's so disturbing about this hugely distressing but phenomenally masterful Auschwitz film is the sound. So good on them. One prediction I got wrong, I should be hung up for. This is a scandal that I did. Best documentary short feature. I picked the ABC's book of the ABC's of Book Banning because I thought it would win. Of course, I showed terrible Atlantic Canadian tendencies in picking that because the winner and rightful winner was none other than Ben Proudfoot from Nova Scotia, winning his second Oscar. That's right, a lad from Nova Scotia won his second Oscar for The Last Repair Shop. I'm a terrible Atlantic Canadian. I don't know how I can call myself the editor of the Maritime Edit magazine. But although I will hasten to add, I mean, my predictions were predictions, not the things I wanted to win. So anyway, massive kudos to Ben Powerfoot of Nova Scotia for winning Best Documentary Short for The Last Repair Show. A lot of pride. I mean, as a Brit turned Maritimer, one amazing, about pretty much half of the awards were won by Brits, hence the fact all of the people mentioning their mothers, because it's British Mother's Day. I'd have no idea why North America and Britain has a different Mother's Day. I'm sure there's a very good reason for it, with something to do with Lent. I don't know. So lots of Brits won, which is always, I guess, a good, a bit of a sense of British pride there. But again, as a Canadian and a Maritimer, to see a Canadian win. So everyone, go and watch The Last Repair Shop. It's on Disney Plus, directed by Bren Proud from Nova Scotia, who won his second Oscar. Many of you asked what I actually wanted to win. I mean, I maybe said this last week, so apologies if I'm already repeating myself. But the film I enjoyed most was, other than Barbie, obviously very enjoyable, was American Fiction. I just thought American Fiction was absolutely amazing. So that was it. So that was the Oscars. But surprises, like I say, Amazon Godzilla, John Cena's nude sketch, absolutely brilliant. Shouldn't have worked. It, as a concept, you would have thought it sounded a bit childish, but for some reason him and Kimmel pulled it off like masters. But I would say the one of my favorite bits of the night, has to be said, was the very transparently blatant John Mulaney audition for the hosting gig next year. That's right, when John Mulaney came out and launched into what was basically an incredible honed stand-up routine about Field of Dreams. It was classic Mulaney. It showed how utterly brilliant he would actually be in that hosting gig. I would be fascinated to know the process of him coming up with that bit. And again, it seems very... Again, it's classic Mulaney. It's very left field. You know, he's obviously gone to some clubs, honed this bit, just like his kind of classic bit on Back to the Future from one of his Netflix specials. But to hone a bit on Field of Dreams, a movie that I believe 1989, you know, we're talking up, you know, over well over 30 years ago, and he comes up and does a bit on a movie that is dated, but trusts that the audience at home and in the room will go with it, and it was, you know, 90-second, 2-minute bit, absolutely brilliant. It was clearly him and the Academy seeing how Mulaney might fare as a host, and I would say he's got it nailed. So that was the Oscars. The other thing I would mention is that Rustin is well worth a watch on Netflix. Also, the film that I thought would win short film was a film called The After, which is horribly disturbing film, but absolutely masterful. And also, right before the Oscars, I actually watched American Symphony, which was up for best documentary about John Batiste, and very moving, very magnificent. So that is the Oscars. We will move on to what else? March break. I hope you all had a wonderful March break. We stayed here. We seem to be some of the only people that stayed here. Everyone seems to have bottomless pits of cash for luxury holidays at this time of year. Good on you. Anyway, we were here, staycationing, did our March break here, and made the most of it. Monday last week, we went to Parley Brook to do the Friar's Nose Lookout, an incredible hike. Google Parley Brook Trail or Friar's Nose Lookout, an amazing thing. Amazingly managed to do that with a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old. Now, granted, there may have been some bribery of offering Fortnite V-Bucks if they continued hiking / climbing. So there's a bit of bribery, but it was... they did it, is the point. So, job done. I had quite a healthy week, I suppose. I went with my wife to a lot of her fitness classes, went to her boxing class, On Friday, made it to my friend Nat Hat, does an incredible spin class, which I thoroughly enjoyed. So in the week, I was very, very sore all over, which is a good way to end March break. Again, another benefit of not going away. You know, everyone else, you're coming back from some all-inclusive resort, you've been eating too much, drinking too much. No, not me. I'm sore all over from trying to keep up with my wife and her friends, which is a very different thing to do because they do this stuff all the time. So that was March break. One of the things I mentioned obviously on this podcast is I want to hear from you. I want you to ask me questions. I want you to tell me if you've got any problems that I can help with, anything at all. And some of you very kindly did write to me after last week. I received feedback. John Tatry, the amazing John Tatry, author of the Peace by Chocolate book about the Haddad family, an author of multiple, many other books, novels, nonfiction, CBC journalist for many years, and currently is the editor of Atlantic Books Today, one of the only other Atlantic Canadian magazines in existence, and also one of my absolute all-time favorites. It's been going for many years, celebrating Atlantic Canadian writers. He asked me a question, which is a tricky one to answer, but he asked it, so because I will answer any question you send to me, I will address, my friends. And by the way, you can send me messages on social media at James Mullinger, or you can just email me, comedy@jamesmullinger.com. John Tatry asked, how would you punch up the Barbie script if they brought it to you looking for more laughs? Controversial question, because I assume in saying that, John is implying there weren't enough laughs in it. I would answer the question like this. I would, like most people, was so blown away at how good Barbie was and is, because none of us were kind of expecting it to be so. To John's point, which is what I think he's getting at, a lot of the stuff that we at the time felt when we watched it was so incredible, like America Ferrera's speech, which was incredible. But when you do break it down, it's not the most radical or new way to convey those views. But yet it felt radical because it was in a Barbie movie. And of course, there was lots of controversy online when the film came out, people saying it was anti-men. Piers Morgan was kicking off saying it was anti-men. And again, I mean, really anyone taking it seriously on either side, it's about Barbie. And she drives a big plastic car that doesn't take gas. I drive a plastic car that doesn't take gas. Anyway, but my point is, I don't know if it necessarily needed... I feel like the movie, because of its success, its colossal success, and I mean, let's face it, one of the absolute highlights of the Oscars was Ryan Gosling singing I'm Just Ken. I mean, what a brilliant moment. You're kind of laughing, you're singing along. Billie Eilish, of course, won. Billie Eilish won her second Oscar, age 22, won her second Oscar. Billie Eilish, she does make the rest of us feel like slackers. No matter what you've achieved, Billie Eilish, phenomenal performer. I remember when the Apple documentary came out about her during COVID. I was going to see it at the cinema twice, actually. I was absolutely blown away by just her talent and her life and her story. And I actually had booked tickets to see Billie Eilish. I was going to take my kids for their very first concert. Again, it got postponed due to COVID and bloody, bloody, blah. And it was like 3 years ago. And then they rescheduled the date for like 3 years' time. And I'm like, well, I've 3 years' time now. And so we got a refund. And it, 3 years' time felt like, so far away. And then the other day, the Ticketmaster tickets kind of popped up on my screen as a reminder because it was that day. It was a few weeks ago. Anyway, but obviously we'd already refunded them. So do I think, I mean, I guess where I would have punched up the script is possibly, the scenes in the Mattel offices are not as clever as they possibly could be. And a lot of those laughs do come from, obviously, Will Ferrell's mugging. And maybe those scenes could be better. But you know what? I mean, I'm answering the question, John, because you asked it. But I feel like it was already exceeded all of our expectations. And I think the only reason anyone might question now aspects of the script or anything else is simply because it has become such a colossal success, more than $1 billion at the box office. I am a huge fan of Greta Gerwig, the writer-director, so much so that, interestingly, right before COVID, so in December 2019, we were staying with my parents in England, obviously not knowing that it was going to be the last time we'd see them for 3 years and not knowing what was about to happen and the world was about to end. But I had one wish for that whole trip, and it was that my mum and I would take Hunter, my son, to see Little Women at the cinema, Greta Gerwig's Little Women, because my mum and I went to see Little Women in 1996, I think it was, when the Winona Ryder version. And it was just one of these beautiful moments. And I believe we went on Mother's Day, and I just remember sitting there with my mum, watching Little Women, a book that we both loved, seeing it depicted fantastically, being in tears, and I wanted to have that experience with my son and my mum together. And we sat and watched Little Women in a cinema in Yeovil, near where my parents live in Somerset. And then, of course, COVID happened, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful memory. And then, of course, Greta Gerwig goes on to do colossal success with Barbie, and actually went to see Barbie on my other son's birthday, which I think, anyway. So I hope that answers your question, John. How would I punch up the script? I would maybe have done some more work on the Will Ferrell scenes. Okay. Messages I received. I received one from Patricia Stout, who said, a great podcast, which is very, very kind. But she very rightly and wisely pointed out that Sussex, New Brunswick need you to shine a light on the dire situation in our town. She's absolutely right. So that's what I'm going to do. After all the attempts to mitigate flooding here, we've been washed out yet again. People's homes, businesses have suffered huge damage. Lives are endangered with swift currents roaring down our streets, farms, banks. Our whole economy and way of life has been held hostage to these annual floods. After decades of living here, we're exhausted and discouraged. Homes must be rebuilt every year. At this rate, it will become a ghost town. They need your help and federal help to bring this dangerous situation to light. Do not let our town drown. Wise words, Patricia. Thank you for doing this. This is what this podcast is for. This is what I hope we can do is shine a light on these things. It is awful. It is absolutely terrible what I've seen happening in Sussex, one of my favourite places in the world. And regardless of whether it's one of my favourite places in the world, this would be a terrible thing to happen anywhere. But the people of Sussex are so strong and so resilient, and they, frankly, are not getting the support they need. This does have to stop, as Patricia says. And I believe I have read and heard, and again, I'm not in politics, so and there's no newspapers anymore, so I don't know where I heard this, but I'd heard that there was feedback from the government that, hey, we can't keep helping, we can't keep bailing you out, or we can't keep helping, which is an absolutely catastrophically awful response to this, because we are not talking about, you know, some billionaire moron that's built their 15th luxury mansion, you know, on the waterfront, and then it happens to get flooded. We're talking about people that have lived in these houses for decades. Some of these houses have been there for 100 years. These are actual homes, actual businesses that have been there, that are the fabric of the town, getting flooded for reasons that are not that anyone's to blame when the house is flooded. But the point is that, you know, there are situations when you read about some millionaire that's built a house in a place that everyone said that they shouldn't, and it's hanging off a cliff and something happens, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, in this instance, Sussex need help. So please, if anyone has any suggestions, anything we can do, anything I can do, because Sussex is genuinely a jewel in this province's crown. It's was the first place one of the first places I ever visited when I came here. Fell in love with the people. Of course, I have lots of family in Sussex. One of my dearest friends of all time, Lloyd Raven, was famously from there. His family is still there. Sussex people are truly the best. They are resilient. The sense of community that they have in that place is unlike almost anywhere else. And they've managed to build up this amazing town where they have gorgeous cafes, beautiful Sussex Ale Works, beautiful pub. There's not many places like this in New Brunswick. We have a street like that you can literally walk to, go for a drink, go for sushi, go to a roadhouse, go to an arts, the Axe, the Arts and Culture Centre. There's a hockey trading card shop, which is also a coin shop, a collector's shop, music shop. There's so many things. It's a gorgeous town that is my favorite place in New Brunswick. And I think it's a damn shame if these floods are happening every year and the federal government are not helping. As Patricia rightly says, we don't want it to become a ghost town. I hope to do more on this, and I hope I can help in any way that I can, shine a light, or indeed any other way. One of our feedback that's published from a man I know and love, and I'm sure many of you know and love, Stephen Clark, who is of course on Twitter as and you really really should follow him. He is one of the funniest tweeters, writers, he's a public figure. You know what? In an age where we don't have any media left in New Brunswick, and we don't have, you know, we don't have people to... Stephen Clark is someone that should be followed, admired. He is on Twitter as at the F word MB. He also has an incredible newsletter, which again, the newsletter doesn't even do it justice. It's a periodical, it's a journal, it's a digital magazine, it's a newspaper. I mean, it's one of the only ways that we have. Basically, what he's tried to do is give the people of Fredericton and surrounding areas a definitive guide to the place. He loves the place. He's lived there for all but one of 40-something years. He grew up exploring the streets, the town. Loves it, the city, and he has created this this newsletter, which is magazine, it's periodical, that is just the most fantastic read wherever you are in the province. And you know what? It always cheers me up. And he posted something very nice about this podcast on Twitter, which, you know, cheered me up. And I will say that all of the kind reviews and messages about this have cheered me up so much. I mean, I know I always just spout positivity on social media because I am... That's my jam, that's what I do. But I'm sure you all know there's a lot of dark days, emotionally, internally. There's also, you know, there's pathetically, you know, like most people, I get a hell of a lot of knockbacks. I get a lot of rejections. Gigs lately have been going absolutely fantastic, and you've been kindly sending them out. But you know, behind the scenes, I've been getting a lot of rejections, should we say, and things that I wanted to happen, not happening, being told that I'm not right for things. All of these part and parcel of this business, but it can really get you down and you can start to think that you're, you know, worthless. And of course, it's all just pathetic. It's all just pathetic ego and all the rest of it. But anyway, my point is that dropping this podcast last week, not having any idea how it was going to be received, knowing that it is literally just me sitting here at a desk, surrounded with the cushions, rambling, because the name's in the title, Weekly Ramble. Receiving one of your, you know, kind words, I've got to tell you, it couldn't have come at a better time. And I was just absolutely over the moon. So thank you very much. And like I say, just send me questions, thoughts, ideas. Next week, I'm very excited about this. So I was in the, I went into the Heart and Stroke Foundation of New Brunswick offices this morning to record a promo video for a event I'm doing with them next week. I am hosting their Super Bingo. I know any of you that follow the Heart and Stroke Foundation of New Brunswick will know this. They are just the most incredible organization. Heart and Stroke Foundation is, of course, a national organization, and every single other province is managed by one body. They all follow the same rules. New Brunswick, Heart and Stroke Foundation of New Brunswick, they, all their initiatives and all their amazing fundraising, the events that they do, like when I hosted the show that they did at the Moncton Casino with Mariana's Trench, and then they had Walk Off the Earth, and then they do Super Bingo every week, and it's become a huge thing, the Super Bingo, and so huge that I'm genuinely nervous about hosting it next week, because it's serious business, bingo. You can't make a mistake. What if I make a mistake? What if I get a number wrong? My house is going to get... These are the things going through my head. Anyway, so I went in this morning to do a promo video. It's a St. Patrick's Day special. next week. I'll be live at 7 p.m. Monday, March 18th. It's just the most amazing. It raises tons of money for the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada, a charity that means a lot to me. You know, there's lots of people in my family that have heart issues. I lost my beloved granny to a heart attack when she was very young. My son River, I don't know if you might have seen a video during the rounds online where River actually going door to door in our neighborhood collecting money for Jump Rope for Heart, raised over $1,000, and he did a little video where they interviewed him about why it means so much to him and why he loves raising money for Heart and Stroke Foundation of New Brunswick. But the great thing about this initiative is, of course, it raises a lot of money for Heart and Stroke, but it also, you can win big. There's $20,000 up for grabs on Monday night in 50 balls or less, and a guaranteed $5,000 in prizes. Cards are just a tenner each, and on sale now. So go to Circle K or Giant Tiger. If you want to check the retailers, the website is heartandstrokemb.ca/bingo. And you can win $20,000 up for grabs. I mean, you can't say fairer than that. So go to the Heart and Stroke Foundation of New Brunswick's Facebook page, follow them. And what else should we talk about? I don't know. You tell us, James. You're the host here. It's a wonderful thing. It's like I say, I think I posted something recently. I posted one of my old school reviews where a teacher had said that I, due to my incessant, what they call daydreaming, I had my head in the clouds, and that there's one school report that I've been reading out on stage a lot recently where a teacher said that I'm not sure James's brain is working to maximum capacity, which is true. I can't follow instructions. As I mentioned, one of my best friends, Nat Hat, teaches a spin class that I go to every Friday morning when I'm not on the road, and I can't keep up. Like I love the spinning, and but when you know when it gets really fast, when it's like the dip, stand, sit, do that, I'm constantly 5 steps behind because the information just takes longer to get to my brain. Like now, when I'm just spewing out words, I have there's no second to sense what I'm saying. It just comes out, but it's like constantly 5 steps behind. Dip, stand, so same thing with church. You know, stand up, sit down. What I'm trying to say is that throughout my entire life, I am always in the wrong place doing the wrong thing. And that is the one constant, along with the fact that I really, really, really do want to be doing the right thing. But, I've embraced that kind of neurodiverse brain. And, now it's a superpower. I mean, it's one of those things, like it's one of the reasons I don't take medication before going on stage, because I think the frenetic madness of my brain flying all over the place is part of what my act is about, you know. And I never forget where I am, I might go off on 15 different tangents when I'm doing a routine on stage, but I will always find my way back to the bit. I don't know how my brain still manages to store where we're at. March break, I had the whole week off stand-up, so it was lovely to do the podcast last week and flex my comedy muscles, if that's what this is. But I'm back on the road now. Tomorrow I am in Oromocto. Saturday actually is my first Saturday this year at Long Bay. I believe there's only something like 6 tickets left. Again, warming up for the Greatest Hits Tour. Testing some brand new materials. Old, possibly in some cases, highly problematic material. That's always the interesting thing. I do that. I dust off old jokes that I used to do and ask the audience, is it still okay to do this? Because times have changed. And again, I'm not someone that doesn't want to change with the times. I want to change with the times. But sometimes these things go well and sometimes they don't. I'm going to leave you now. Support Sussex any way you can. Send me emails, of course, anything at all that we can collaborate on, anything we can shine a light on. Send me your messages and your questions, and I will talk about them on air. Right, I'm off. Happy Wednesday. Enjoy your weekend, and hopefully I'll see you either at Long Bay this Saturday night, or I will see you on Monday night for the Heart and Stroke Super Bingo. Yes. A new issue of the Maritime Edit magazine came out today. I've been posting about that on the old socials. Again, at this rate, we're one of the only print publications left in existence in all of Atlantic Canada. Absolutely dire, terrible state of affairs right now. But new issue's out. The cover story is about the opening of the first Les Maisons Simons store, opening at Halifax Shopping Centre, which actually opens next week. Grand opening next Thursday, which is hosted, the MC, the CEO of Simons will be there, and the whole event's going to be hosted by my favourite person to watch do anything, Pamela Mullinger. So that's nice, and she's interviewed Bernard Lebon for the new issue of the mag. So pick it up, check it out. If you're a subscriber, it will have come to you in the mail already. Tons of great stuff in there. I've written a 10-page story about my love of St. Andrews and why I love St. Andrews. But I think probably for the next issue, I will write a similar person. We call it a personal journey. It's like, because it's not a definitive travel guide. It's my personal travel guide. I think I'm going to write, here we go. Here's some ideas happening on the spot. I am going to do one on Sussex for the next issue so I can write about A, all the amazing businesses and people that I love in Sussex, but also shine a light on the despicable situation there that is not getting the support that it deserves from government and those in power. So thank you, Patricia Hagen, Patricia Stout, for highlighting this. That's what this podcast is for. This is your podcast, not mine. I'm just the one sitting here chatting. So send me those things. Before we go, I feel like every week I want to do an unlikely recommendation, right? An unlikely recommendation where I end by plugging something or sharing something or recommending something to all of you that I don't think many of you may have seen or heard of. And I'm going to tell you, for my birthday, my parents always kindly send me like a box of VHS videos, which is always just such a treat. So it's like yesterday was just a joy just opening up all my gifts. It was like, multiple cans of beautiful Long Bay lager, and massive pile of VHS and British true crime, British gangster DVDs. My wife got me a copy of the Last Gangster, a book by Charlie Richardson, famously of the Richardsons, who were rivals of the Krays for the uninitiated. I love true crime, not all that weird, horrible, horrible serial killer stuff. I like the good old British villains, the old British villains. They had their heart in the right place. I mean, yes, he would put yes, he would nail a hand to the table, but he would always help old ladies across the road. I love all that kind of hypocritical, contradictory bullshit that you get in these fantastic villain books and villain documentaries. Love it. Anyway, I want to recommend a movie to you. I guess it's somewhat inspired by my 1 week of fitness last week. And it is a movie that is my favourite movie of all time. And the reason I mentioned the VHS thing is I'm holding the VHS right now. This VHS box, this is it was one of the very first VHS tapes I ever owned. It still has the price sticker, £3. Purchased from a basement at a movie collector's fair in Camden Town in North London. Called the Electric Ballroom. The film fair was called Movie Mania. One of the first VHS I ever owned. It is dated 1985. It is the movie that made me want to be a journalist. And you're thinking to yourself, oh, you know, which amazing movie about journalism is this going to be? You know, is all the president's men? No, it's a perfect with John Travolta. That is my recommendation for the week. This is now becoming a B-movie film club. Okay, so what I want you to do. Everyone to go away and watch Perfect. It stars John Travolta and Jamie Lee Curtis. There is a theme here, because Jamie Lee Curtis was, of course, one of the absolute stars of the Oscars, one of the most elegant dresses. I believe she won last year, didn't she? Anyway, Jamie Lee Curtis, a true hero. She and John Travolta play, it's a story of John Travolta plays a Rolling Stone magazine reporter. Ingeniously, the editor is played by the actual editor of Rolling Stone and founder of Rolling Stone magazine. He is sent to write an assignment, a feature on the health club boom and the popular obsession with physical perfection. And it's basically him going in to somewhat undercover. I guess it's not undercover, but he goes in to ascertain whether it's all just about sex and starts a wonderfully energetic, shall we say, affair with Jamie Lee Curtis. The film was made by James Bridges. I think maybe, I don't want to say that. Has he been cancelled? I don't know. Anyway, so Jan Wenner of Rolling Stone is in it. Perfect. It's a great movie. I'm holding the VHS. It's the exact tape that my dad bought me in what I think would have been 1989 or 1990. I watched it over and over and over and over again. It just thought being a journalist looked like the most fun thing in the world. It's brilliantly entertaining. Watch the trailer right now. Watch it, but and tell me what you think of it. Behind me, I also have the I'm not saying I'm a complete nerd, but I do have the soundtrack on vinyl and the original UK quad cinema poster also in the vicinity. So everyone go away and watch Perfect. Let's call it Mullinger's Weekly Ramble Weird Recommendation of the Week. Every week, I'm going to recommend a weird, random, old book, B movie, album, whatever, that I don't think many of you would have seen. It's called Perfect. It stars John Travolta, Jamie Lee Curtis. Check it out. This has been Mullinger's Weekly Ramble. Send me an email, comedy@jamesmullinger.com. I will be back this time next week. All that leaves me to say is thank you for listening to me ramble. It is genuinely an honour to be in your car, headphones, ears, however you're listening to this right now. It's really lovely that you are. Thank you. Shout out to Reese and John at Podstarter, who are the geniuses that somehow take this crap and upload it to all of the places that you're listening to it on, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. And contact Reese and John if you would like to hear about sponsorship opportunities or anything like that. Thank you very much. I've been James Mullinger. This has been Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.
Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.